Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 12th of January, 2015, the podcast that's listed as a Schedule 1 drug. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Jonathan Loche. John, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
Let's dox the news of the bogus. So, guess what? Congress doesn't like the fact that DC legalized marijuana, so they're working to undo it. But it seems they inadvertently made a loophole that will keep marijuana legal in D.C. indefinitely.
Well, this is the government, and we can't expect them to actually read the bills they pass.
For once, their ineptitude might work in our favor. So, Harold Rogers, a Kentucky Republican in the House Appropriations Committee, intended a rider in an omnibus spending bill, and you know, that's one of the ones they just stick everything into when they just want it passed automatically, that will stop D.C. from legalizing marijuana. But apparently there was some back and forth debate going on, and three words got taken out. And what it says is the D.C. is prohibited from using funds contained in this act to enact any law, rule, or regulation to legalize or otherwise reduce penalties associated with the possession, use, or distribution of any Schedule 1 substance. Okay, so that sounds pretty solid, isn't it? It sounds like they're not going to let them legalize marijuana. Well, the thing is, originally, the rider said enact or carry out. So now it doesn't say carry out anymore, it just says enact. And Initiative 71, which was the ballot measure that DC voters overwhelmingly approved to legalize marijuana, says it's already enacted and there's no legislative action that needs to be taken to put it into place. So enacting it is moot.
And now I'm sure Congress will have something to say about that. This is the government that made famous what is the definition of the word is.
True. But there is one way they can stop it from taking effect, which is if Congress approves a joint resolution no later than 30 legislative days after it's submitted for review. And if it's passed and signed by the president before the review period ends, then it's basically repealed.
I didn't see. So when does the review period end?
It's 30 legislative days after it's submitted, and it's going to be submitted sometime this month.
Okay.
So that hasn't happened yet, but it has to go through both houses and get to the president.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it might not make it through in 30 days.
Hopefully.
Yeah, but I mean, this is just another case of, I mean, the voters just overwhelmingly said, yes, this is what we want. And the government says, ah, screw you. We're not going to let you do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's democracy, you see.
Democracy for me, not for thee.
Yep, pretty much.
Well, I think we talked about this a couple of years ago on the podcast. Was Florida enacted two amendments that basically prohibited gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the two Congress critters that the amendments specifically targeted pretty much sued, saying that, oh, no, this is about denying minority rights to voting.
Oh, yeah. We got a district like that. Probably have a few, actually, but there's one real famous one called the I-85 district because it kind of winds up and down I-85. But if you remember, former Congressman Mel Watt, mm-hmm. Kind of a famous guy, that was his district.
Yeah, well, the one locally for me is Corinne Brown. And her district basically starts off in sort of like downtown Jacksonville, and then gets real, at some point I think it's only like 100 feet wide as it goes through Clay County, and then swallows up whole counties that are, you know, very rural and black, and then it gets real small again right around Orlando, and it swallows up the black neighborhoods of Orlando.
Isn't Florida the one that has a district somewhere where there's like something that says the district has to be contiguous? So it's basically these two clumps with this really thin strip in the middle.
That's exactly the district I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think I saw that one. Yeah, it's contiguous. Yeah, they find a way around it.
Mm-hmm.
So we absolutely need government to educate our children. Or so they say. But what happens in countries where government is actively opposing education? The black market steps in and does the job for them, and does it surprisingly well, too. And this has to do with a study by Pauline Dixon and James Tooley, and they looked at several third world countries and just found that the education system there was just horrific, and especially all these poor people just basically left without any option for school, basically. And so what they said in their study was, quote, "The first component of our research consisted of a systematic census and survey of all primary and secondary schools, government and private, in selected low-income areas. The second component examined a stratified random sample of between 2,000 and 4,000 children in each of these areas. Tests in mathematics, English, and in Africa, one other subject, were administered. Children and teachers were also tested for their IQ, and questionnaires were administered to students, parents, teachers, and school managers or head teachers." And what they found was that a huge majority of poor students in all these low-income areas, by far, most of them were attending private schools, not public. And in fact, like, there was a low-income area of Ghana where there were 779 schools total. Only 25% of them were government schools. 64% of children in the area attended private school. And in a similar area of Nigeria, 75% of students attended private schools.
I assume by government school they mean was set up and is receiving funds through the government.
Yeah, taxpayer funded.
Right, yeah. Because I mean, I'm sure in quite a few of these areas, that pretty much the only option is, you know, the community bands together and someone's like, okay, you're the guy who knows most about math. You're teaching the kids about math today.
Yeah, pretty much. They seem kind of thrown together. But yeah, they are unregistered. And in a lot of cases, they're even illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of getting funds from the government, a lot of them have to give bribes to the government in order to stay open.
So basically kind of like charter schools now.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, like the charter schools in North Carolina, the law says that you have to have the same per student budget for charter schools as you do for the government schools. But of course, they have their ways of doing the funky accounting, and, you know, the charter schools get like something like $7,000 or $8,000 per student, whereas the government schools get over $10,000 or something like that. You know, once you include everything else in.
You got to make sure to include all the bloated bureaucracy in the public sector.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just that kind of funky accounting that if a corporation did that, the SEC would be all over their rear ends.
Mm-hmm.
So there aren't a lot of public schools in these areas, in these countries they were looking in. And what there were just so incredibly dysfunctional. They talk about rampant absenteeism. And what you might think about that is, oh, the students just don't show up. No, they're talking about teacher absenteeism. Teachers just don't show up for work. And the children just are there running wild or whatever.
So like American public schools.
Well, the difference is American public schools, the kids run wild while the teacher's there. So.
True.
But yeah, they're pretty much jobs programs and not schools. And so they looked at the raw scores on test results. Quote, "The raw scores from our student achievement tests show considerably higher achievement in the private than in government schools. In Hyderabad, for instance, mean scores in mathematics were about 22 percentage points and 23 percentage points higher in private, unrecognized, and recognized schools, respectively, than in government schools. The advantage was even more pronounced for English. In all cases, this achievement advantage was obtained at between half and a quarter of the teacher salary costs."
Hmm. I mean, this doesn't really surprise me because, and I said, I assume in most of these quote-unquote private schools, it's community-driven with much more incentive to make sure that there's a base amount of education amongst the youth.
Yeah, and it just seems to be like, you know, everyone in a community coming together and pooling their resources, and like they've got some pictures of them, and one of them I wouldn't even call it a house. It's basically a roof on sticks, and all the kids are under that, and there's a blackboard in the front, and
mm-hmm.
things like that. And so some of them are sitting at desks. There's other pictures where they're just sitting at benches and just kind of doing whatever. But I mean, they're just making the most of it.
Mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder, with $1 billion public school budgets, why we're failing it with, never mind. Not even go down there, bro.
I think we've all seen the graph where all of the performance metrics stay flat while the spending per student goes up, 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 up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the more money doesn't fix things.
No.
It's community involvement, not how much money the bureaucrats can throw at it. And the more things you do, like Common Core and No Child Left Behind, the more you undermine that. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. So, John, you had a story for us about the EPA?
Yes, and speaking about government's role in the poor, the EPA has recently banned the production sale of approximately 80% of America's current wood-burning stoves, the oldest heating method known to mankind and mainstay of rural homes even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Shane, but this week it was getting pretty freaking cold.
Oh, it's really cold.
There was like a half inch of snow in Jacksonville on Wednesday.
Wow. We didn't get snow here, but it got really cold. And yeah, when I was growing up, in our house we had a fireplace, and then one year my dad put in a wood stove, and it's one of those that just inserts into the fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes everything so much warmer. I think Mythbusters found that if you light a fire in a fireplace, it makes the room that the fireplace is in 3 degrees warmer, but makes the rest of the house 3 degrees cooler. But you put that wood stove in there, and especially this one had the fan on it that would blow the hot air through, and mm-hmm. Oh, that was nice, especially when you're coming in out of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
So what's their problem with wood-burning stoves?
The agency's stringent one-size-fits-all policy applies equally to heavily polluted cities like New York and Los Angeles, and off-the-grid wilderness areas such as Alaska and the American West.
But isn't this a biofuel? I thought biofuels were good.
Where restrictions have previously banned wood-burning stoves that didn't limit fine airborne particle emissions to 15 micrograms per cubic meter, the change was to impose a maximum of 12 microgram limit.
Wow.
To put this amount in context, the EPA estimates that secondhand tobacco smoke, which again we also know is bullshit, in a closed car can expose a person to 3,000 to 4,000 micrograms of particles per cubic meter.
And they've really gone through and measured all of this and really haven't been able to find any real detrimental effects from secondhand smoke.
Right.
And this is, what, 3 orders of magnitude lower?
Yeah. Most wood stoves that, the ones I assume can filter out the smoke that finally, they're too expensive for the kind of family that's going to want to put a wood-burning stove in their house to afford.
Right. So, screw the poor again.
Uh-huh. According to the U.S. Census Bureau's most latest statistics, 2.4 million American houses, 12% of homes all around, still have burned wood as their primary heating fuel.
So, basically, 1 out of every 9 households this is going to affect.
Yes.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is, reading the part of the story where it says local governments are saying, hey, that doesn't go far enough, we have to ban fireplaces too.
Mm-hmm. God forbid, people are going to start burning down their homes.
I mean, is it just pollution they're worried about?
No, and then the next part of the article talks about how the EPA and various environmental lobbies essentially have, as a way to curtail the checks and balances, essentially agreed to what are called, quote-unquote, sue-and-settle practices, sometimes referred to as friendly lawsuits, where environmentalist groups file lawsuits against federal agencies, where in court-ordered consent decrees are issued based upon pre-arranged settlement agreement that collaboratively craft together in advance behind closed doors. Then, rather than allowing the entire process to play out, the agency being sued settles the lawsuit by agreeing to move forward with the requested action both they and the litigants want.
Yeah, so this is more crazy stuff with our court system. But, I mean, if you stop people from using wood-burning stoves, what are they going to use? They're probably going to use electric furnaces, I would think, and we're still generating most of our electricity with coal and oil, fossil fuels. So how are you helping the environment here?
Yeah, and not even as an environmental question. A good chunk of folks that use wood-burning stoves, they might not even have electricity as an option.
That's true.
As crazy as that is to say in 2015.
Oh, yeah, you go to some poor areas, and yeah, the electric grid through there is just so trashy and horrible. that they can basically get enough juice to keep the lights going.
Mm-hmm.
And even it even says here in the article that the EPA's own science advisory board says that the studies that led to all this regulation had never been peer-reviewed, and there was no evidence that you could actually meet those limits with the available technology.
It's not surprising. All this is from the same agency that the Deepwater Horizon thing, when they couldn't, other countries couldn't use their oil skimmers because of some random standard. But
yeah. Well, it reminded me of back in 2004 when I ran for county commissioner. The EPA sent one of their stooges down to hype up the importance of their new clean air standards. I actually asked them directly, because they were saying, these things, they're responsible for people with asthma going to the hospital and old people going to the hospital. And I asked them directly, can they point me to any peer-reviewed studies that show that removing this amount is going to have an effect? Nope. They didn't do the studies. They didn't look for any studies. They don't know of any studies. It's just do what we say.
Mm-hmm. It's cronyism in this case, brought about by using the court system to essentially skirt the regular legislative process, and essentially allows lobbyist groups to rule by fiat through incompetent bureaucrats.
Yeah. Do I need to point out Downsize DC's Write the Laws Act again? We need it, folks. This is not how government's supposed to work. This is how tyrannies work.
Mm-hmm. And going back to our earlier point about, off-the-grid stuff, Alaska's 663,000 square miles is mostly forest land, offering residents an abundant source of available firewood. When county officials floated a plan to regulate the burning of wood, residents were understandably inflamed.
Ha 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 ha, inflamed, I get it.
Yeah.
But hey, it's Alaska, we'll just put solar panels up there, that'll work, won't it?
Well, for 8 months out of the year.
Oh, it should work great, solar panels work best when they're facing south, and you're always facing south up there, so it works great.
Unless you're up in the far north and the sun doesn't come up for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. And then there are times where it stays up for 3 or 4 months, but it's not at the same point. It kind of like goes around the horizon. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. Well, it's hard to keep the free market down, but our corporatist legal system does its best. A 22-year-old entrepreneur has had a lawsuit filed against him for, get this, helping people find the best prices on airline tickets.
How dare you give away our product for cheap?
At prices we're offering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was 22-year-old computer whiz Ataro Zaman, and he made a website called Skiplagged, and it uses a type of cheap airfare called Hidden City. The airlines don't like it, but as far as anyone can tell, this is completely legal. What you do is, if you wanted to come up and visit me, and you want to fly from Jacksonville to Charlotte, and that's $400, let's say, but then you find, because Charlotte is a nice big hub airport for a lot of airlines, you find a plane ticket for Jacksonville to Richmond that lays over in Charlotte that's $300. So you book that flight, you get on it, you fly to Charlotte, you just bring carry-on, you don't check in luggage or anything like that. And then when you get off the plane in Charlotte, you just don't make the connection. You just come out, you meet me outside, I pick you up, and that's it. And then on the way back, maybe you could get a flight to, Montgomery, Alabama, or somewhere that lays over in Jacksonville. And again, you just wouldn't make the connecting flight and get it for a lot cheaper. Well, They don't like that. And according to Zaman in a blog post, quote, "Everything Skip Lagged has done and continues to do is legal, but the only way to effectively prove it is with lawyers." And this is in a blog post on GoFundMe. And he's crowdfunding his legal costs. He doesn't know what he needs exactly, because, I mean, who knows when you get into it. But his goal is $65,000. As of this recording, he's just shy of that, like $64,700 and change. Maybe he'll be over the top by the time this comes out, but...
Well, God's good.
Yeah, jumping in post, as I edit this podcast, he has raised $65,090, so he met the $65,000 goal. The new goal is $75,000. But he told people, quote, "I really don't know how much this lawsuit is going to ultimately cost, other than probably a lot. However, you have my word that how every cent is spent will be posted here. If there are any remaining funds, those will be completely donated to charity. I haven't decided which yet, but if you have any suggestions, do send me a message." And by the way, he wasn't making any money off of Skip Lagged. He just kind of did it on his own. He wasn't making money off of it. He was just wanting to help people.
And the airlines, as far as I know, it's not like you're not paying for that plane ticket for the other connecting flight.
Right. Yeah, it's just going to have an empty seat. It may not even have an empty seat, because airlines like overbooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you may be letting someone else get on that flight.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the big problem is they have these weird, complicated pricing schemes. And I mean, I've seen travel blogs and things like that where they mention all sorts of tricks to try and get around their schemes and try to find the lowest price. And it's like, why don't they just offer the lowest price to begin with?
Because at this point, we might as well rename all the airports of the American Department of Transportation.
Or something like that, yeah.
It's sad, but you know, the fact of the matter is at this point, the airline industry is so heavily regulated and so in bed with the government.
Yeah, very corporatized and subsidized.
Again, it's kind of like the healthcare industry. You have sort of the worst aspects of both free market and a socialist government control market.
Yeah, but they have their excuses already. They say, oh, this makes it difficult to track passengers. Why that is an issue, I don't know. And it unfairly takes advantage of the hub and spoke nature of airlines, where they have hub cities like Charlotte, where a lot of them fly out of. But isn't that their fault? I mean, in our original example, you were going to take a nonstop flight from Jacksonville to Charlotte. Instead, you booked a flight that was cheaper from Jacksonville to Richmond, I think we said, that laid over in Charlotte. Why would that be cheaper? I mean, if you're just going from Jacksonville to, isn't that all the same price?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a mess. Now, I mean, anyone can do this, but it's really time-consuming, and they don't really advertise. You know, you can't say, oh, find me a flight that lays over in this particular city. And so what his website did was just simplify that. And, of course, it's not even any kind of guarantee that you'll find such a flight. There might be no flight that lays over in that city, or you'll find a flight that lays over, but it costs more after all.
Mm-hmm.
But the airlines say if they discover that you're doing this, and how they would discover that, I don't know. But they reserve the right to cancel the ticket without a refund and even void frequent flyer mileage.
Wow.
And United had their propaganda already. Quote, "This practice violates our fare rules." That's F-A-R-E, not F-A-I-R. "And we are taking action to stop it to help protect the vast majority of customers who buy legitimate tickets."
Yeah.
Protect them from what?
And by what do you mean by legitimate tickets?
And Orbit said, quote, "Skip Lag had developed technology that provided a direct link to our booking engine. So when it identified a hidden city itinerary, there was a book now button that the customer clicked, directed them to Orbitz, and then we processed the transaction, not knowing the intent of the customer." So we have to know your intent. If you step in Walmart and you buy a bag of potato chips, we need to know what your intent is with that bag of potato chips. Yeah. And they also said, quote, "While some independent operators might encourage consumers to try and break ticketing rules, we have an obligation to uphold airline fare rules and also protect consumers from making purchases that could be invalidated." Well, if you're that worried about it, you could just stop invalidating the tickets.
Now, at what point are the airlines going to realize it's not 1980s anymore? You can't just hide pricing tricks.
Yeah.
And not expect them to get out.
A lot of people talking about this. Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. And now it's time to hoist the petard of this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to some Harvard professors, specifically the ones in the Faculty of Arts and Sciences who spent years talking up Obamacare and its merits. But in November they voted overwhelmingly against that very same legislation when it came to applying it to themselves.
Why doesn't this surprise me at all?
Well, we didn't mean us. Now, it actually came too late to stop cost increases from taking effect in 2015. But I mean, this is the big question. You know, the whole time Obamacare was being talked up, it was about, oh, people can't afford it. People shouldn't be made to pay for it. And now it's all about, oh, we need to make people pay more for it.
Yeah, and this is another example of, like, when Congress basically made themselves exempt from Obamacare.
Yeah.
If it's so good, why aren't the people in power not on it?
That was what Tim said as soon as it passed.
Mm-hmm.
So you have health economist David M. Cutler, who was an advisor to President Obama's 2008 campaign, quote, "Harvard is a microcosm of what's happening in healthcare in the country. But up to now, the professors have avoided the higher expenses that other employers have had to pass on to their employees. And that actually makes this outrage fairly remarkable," he says, because, quote, "Harvard was and remains a very generous employer." But, I mean, even the most generous employers have been having problems with Obamacare. Like, what was that one you brought up a few months ago? Trader Joe's?
Yeah.
Yeah, really noted for taking good care of their employees, but now they're saying, hey, we can't afford to do this, people.
Yeah, they were one of the first ones that had to come out and say, well, guys, 28 hours is new full-time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are getting hit hard by that. And I wasn't planning on covering this, but the House has already passed a bill that's saying, no. 40 hours a week is full-time. And the liberals, of course, are in uproar. They're trying to, you know, hurt the poor and get rid of Obamacare and all that. It's like, well, right now, people in lower-paying jobs, because they're not able to make that much money for the company, they keep getting cut off at 28 hours, and they're not able to work. Let them work more hours. I don't understand how not being able to work as many hours, and therefore not making as much money, is supposed to be good for their health care.
That means their food stamps and Medicaid are going to get decreased.
Mm. But, I mean, this is all due to things like preventive services, you know, mammograms and colonoscopies, and even weird things like coverage for children up to age 26. Only a politician would consider a 26-year-old to be a child.
Hey, I took advantage of that. But
why not? I mean, this is not like they're not taking half your income anyway.
Isn't acupuncture covered under Obamacare?
I don't know if it's covered under Obamacare specifically, but a lot of states require it. And so they're going to be in the packages that are available on that state's exchange, and of course that's just going to bump up the price some more.
Mm-hmm.
And they're even taxing, or they're going to start taxing in a couple of years at least, I don't know if it's the gold and platinum plans, but basically if you buy one of the more expensive plans, they're going to start taxing that too.
Yeah, that's, and I know at my job, I guess technically the healthcare plan I have qualifies as one of the quote-unquote Cadillac plans.
Yeah.
But I think the exemption for that runs out in either 2016 or 2017. Bunch of people in my job are going to be SOL.
Oh, yeah. So the president of Harvard, Drew Gilpin Faust, said in a letter to the faculty that, yes, these changes are causing distress and generated anxiety, but they were necessary because the costs of their health benefits were growing faster than the operating revenues or staff salaries. And if it wasn't that, the money was going to have to come out from somewhere else, like teaching, research, and student aid. So that's the point where they are.
You know, it's kind of a sad thing, but the old saying is true. Socialism is great until it's your money.
No. Well, that's kind of like one of the things that Professor of Economics and former Provost Jerry Green said, quote, "It's equivalent to taxing the sick. I don't think there's any government in the world that would tax the sick." Well, except for socialist countries and any other country with universal health care, because that's how you pay for it!
Mm-hmm. Where do you think the money comes from?
Yeah.
Even looking at this quote-unquote outrageous new health insurance plan for professors, it's still pretty generous than what most people can get under Obamacare.
Oh, yeah. Please give me that option. Not like I get it. So once again, government intervention is a good idea when it's someone else that has to pay for it. And it's that very hypocrisy that leads us to name these grousing Harvard professors as this week's biggest bogon emitter. You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers, and Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.bogosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.bogosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. And now it's time to spackle the cracks in this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
And isn't it amazing that when you give government the power to censor, the things they censor get more and more ridiculous? The UK just banned photos from websites that show, get this, a gap in between women's thighs.
Well, okie dokie then. Nice to know we went back to the Victorian era.
I don't even know if this is... They actually called it the thigh gap.
Oh, God.
And the British Advertising Standards Authority told this one website that was displaying ad for underwear that they couldn't use this picture because there was a gap in between the model's thighs. And they said, quote, the ad must not appear again in its current form, and that they must, quote, ensure that the images in their ads were responsibly prepared. The model in the picture was unhealthily thin, and the ad was irresponsible and harmful. There was a significant gap between the model's thighs, and her thighs and knees were similar width. We considered that the model looked underweight in the picture. We understood that Urban Outfitters' target market was young people and considered that using a noticeably underweight model was likely to impress upon that audience that the image was representative of the people who might wear Urban Outfitters' clothing and as being something to aspire to. We therefore concluded that the ad was irresponsible.
Well, okay then.
But I mean, some people are just naturally slim. They're ectomorphs. I mean, geez, if you had seen me in my 20s, or even earlier, you know, in my high school years, you could have used me as a poster child for, you know, starving children of the world. I mean, I was skinny as a rail. I wasn't unhealthy. I was eating healthy. I was a good weight.
Yeah, it's... So what are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to put a sign saying no fat chicks in between the gap in the thighs?
I don't know. But I mean, the thing is, I mean, people have different body types. People are built differently. People have different hip bones and different ways that their thigh muscles are made. So some people won't have much of a gap, even if they're very thin. Others would really have to put on a lot of weight, probably an unhealthy amount, not to have a thigh gap.
Yeah. Again, it's supposed to be all about, quote unquote, making you feel good about your body type.
But aren't they sending a message to women who have a thigh gap that there's something wrong with their bodies? Why doesn't it work the other way, too?
Yeah, God. And I think American taxpayer money gets spent on stupid things sometimes.
It's pretty much the same everywhere, unfortunately. Yeah, but I mean, it's just kind of like the Real Women Have Curves campaign. Well, aren't they insulting all of the female ectomorphs out there?
Mm-hmm. Once again, though, government never does truly like, it's got to be one size fits all.
Well, it has to be, you have to fit in this box, and if you don't fit in this box, then there's something wrong with you. And
right.
They're not being inclusive here. They're not making women feel good about their bodies because they're saying that there's something wrong with this particular body type. And one of the big things that'll get to this detraction is acting directly against your stated goals. So all of that makes these UK censors this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
Well, that wraps up this I Had a Nick on My Brimble Once edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv and read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website. And if you'd like to join us, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv and even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Jonathan Lochey for joining me.
Great to be back.
Until next time, here's a quote from Stephen Fry. Heightened self-consciousness, apartness, and inability to join in, physical shame and self-loathing, they are not all bad. Those devils have been my angels. Without them, I would never have disappeared into language, literature, the mind, laughter, and all the mad intensities that made and unmade me. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
To hell with Oregon. Go Noles.